I'm glad you're here for another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word. We pick up where we left off with a cliffhanger last time in 2 Kings chapter number 9. I want us to go back to verse 21. The situation is this. God, through the prophet Elisha and through an unnamed prophet among the sons of the prophets, has designated Jehu, a commander of the armies of northern Israel, as the new king of northern Israel. And he has been given a very specific assignment to terminate the Ahab family line and to carry out judgment against this wicked dynasty. And so Jehu is immediately declared king by all of his command staff. He puts a very tight security lid on everything at Ramoth Gilead, where he was actually carrying out military operations on behalf of northern Israel. And he takes part of his entourage immediately back to Jezreel, about 40 road miles away. Now, I believe that he probably rode overnight, and so it might have slowed it down a bit during the hours of darkness. And so I think he was probably approaching the city of Jezreel from the east on the early morning the next day. And so we've already heard in our last session how the watchman gives a heads up about how there's some sort of force approaching from the east. They send out two riders in a row to see whether or not they're bringing news of some sort of major development in the fight at Ramoth Gilead. Neither of those horsemen come back. Both of them are absorbed into the approaching formation. So that then causes King Jehoram to go out and find out for himself. So 2 Kings chapter 9, verse 21. Jehoram said, "Make ready." And they made ready his chariot. And then Jehoram, king of Israel, and Ahaziah, king of Judah, set out, each in his chariot, and went to meet Jehu. So this is both the uncle, Jehoram, of northern Israel, king, and nephew Ahaziah, king of southern Judah, just very recently into that position. And so they both jump in their chariots and they leave the east gate, and they would have only got a very short distance before they met Jehu at a very significant site. They met him at the property of Naboth the Jezreelite, the man who was murdered at the direction of Queen Jezebel in order to absorb his vineyard into the holdings of King Ahab, just for his own personal pleasure. Now, Ahab's long dead. Well, not super long, but he's dead. Jezebel's still around. But this property is not simply what was stolen, it's the place where Naboth was murdered. And so this is where the two kings meet the new king. Verse 22, when Joram saw Jehu, he said, "Is it peace, Jehu?" Which means, basically, have you come to some arrangement regarding Ramoth Gilead? Does it belong to us again? But Jehu responds very aggressively. He answered, "What peace can there be so long as the whorings," meaning the supernatural, the religious whorings, adultery, "and the sorceries," which is a reference to messing around in the spirit world, either by using drugs or sometimes music or chanting, "and your mother Jezebel, of your mother Jezebel are so many. So you can tell immediately that Jehu has a long-standing problem with Jezebel and with the Ahab family, particularly their religious activities. And the moment he says these things, Jehoram of northern Israel realizes this is a coup. And so Joram reigned about, and he fled, saying to Ahaziah, "Treachery, O Ahaziah!" So he wheels about in his chariot, which was not the best strategy, because now his back is toward his enemy. And this is what gets him killed. Verse 24, Jehu drew his bow with his full strength and shot Joram between the shoulders so that the arrow pierced his heart and he sank in his chariot. So immediately, Jehu personally shot him in the back with a mortal blow, and he collapses and he starts bleeding out in the bottom of this chariot. That'll be important to the story in a bit. I want to skip the next few verses, and we'll come back to it because we want to take these events as they happen chronologically. Now remember, Ahaziah had just been told by his uncle that we're in trouble here. This is treachery. You need to run away. Now, verse 27, when Ahaziah, the king of Judah, saw this, he fled in the direction of Beth-hagen. So he doesn't turn around to try to get back into the city of Jezreel, which is to the west, turning his back on Jehu. He instead wheels his chariot toward the south. And so it is a deflecting angle of shooting at this point for Jehu to get a shot at him. And Jehu pursued him and said, "Shoot him also!" So he wants him dead too, because, you know, he's an ally to the king of northern Israel that Jehu has been dispatched to take out, a relative, a blood relative of him. And so they shot him in the chariot at the ascent of Gur, which is by Iblim. Now, we know where Iblim is at. It's near where the modern city of Jenin is located. It's about 7 or 8 miles south of Jezreel. And so apparently, somewhere in that 7 miles or so, as the chase is going on, they're shooting at him and shooting at him, and they must have hit him in one of the shots. And he is wounded enough that he doesn't want to keep going south along this road because there are no other secure places until you get up with some altitude into the hill country, heading back towards Samaria. And so apparently a decision is made by his command staff that's with him in his chariot and in the chariots that would have been escorting him. We need to turn westward and make a break for Megiddo, which is a fortified city about 8 miles or so past where they're at right now. And so we're told that he fled to Megiddo, and then we're told that that's where he died. But that's not the fullness of the story yet. Again, my guess here, because we have to kind of put all these things together, is that the fresh chariot horses of Ahaziah and his attendants clearly outpaced the spent horses of Jehu and his men, because they've been running furiously, remember, like crazy people, in order to get to Jezreel at that last moment. So they get away, and Jehu probably calls off the pursuit, can see that he's heading toward Megiddo, and so he knows where he's at. So what does he do? We go back to the verses we just skipped, okay? So verse number 25. Jehu said to Bidkar, his aide, "Take him up and throw him on the plot of ground belonging to Naboth the Jezreelite." So this is in reference to Jehoram's bled-out corpse, which is right there east of the city of Jezreel, very near the Naboth vineyard. So he says, take his body, throw it down there on the ground in Naboth's vineyard. And then he says this, "For remember when you and I rode side by side behind Ahab his father." So now we find out that Bidkar and Jehu were a little bit more junior commanders back in the day that Elijah came and gave Ahab his prophecy about how he would be punished for taking the Naboth vineyard. These guys were there that day at this exact spot. So you take the body, Bidkar, you throw it down here where you and I were when he who is made this pronouncement against him. And then we have the quote, "As surely as I saw you yesterday, the blood of Naboth and the blood of his sons, declares he who is, I will repay you on this plot of ground." So, I would guess that Jehoram may have been with his dad that same day when they took possession of Naboth's vineyard and Elijah the prophet gave them the bad news that they were going to pay for it at this exact site. And so Jehu says, let Jehoram's body be tossed out right here. "Now therefore take him, throw him on the plot of ground in accordance with the word of he who is." And of course, this is outside the walls, so his body's going to get pecked on by scavenger birds. That's what Jehu wants done. Verse 30 now. When Jehu came to Jezreel, which is right there, I mean, all he has to do is just come in the gate now, Jezebel heard of it, and she painted her eyes and adorned her head and looked out of the window. So she is the widow of the late King Ahab. She is now Queen Mother. She puts on her makeup. She puts on her queen clothing, including her crown. And she comes and looks out the window as Jehu comes through the gate. As Jehu entered the gate, she said, "So is it peace, Zimri, murderer of your master?" Now, that's a cultural reference. Zimri was the man who murdered the last king of a previous dynasty and took the throne for himself. Now, he didn't last very long, just a few days. And so that is what she's throwing in his face, is basically that he is a murderer and he is a usurper of the throne. Now, he lifted up his face to the window. So he looks up where she was just making fun of him, mocking him. And he said, "Who's on my side? Who?" And two or three eunuchs looked out at him. And we find out again something that's been just bubbling under the surface. And that is, an awful lot of people hated King Ahab, Queen Jezebel, King Jehoram, and whoever his, you know, wife is, didn't like them at all, wanted them gone. And so two or three of the eunuchs, which would be officials that took care of Queen Jezebel's demands, they look out the window when he says, "Who's going to help me?" And he said, "Throw her down." And so they just tossed her right out of the window. Now, we don't know how high this window is, but she didn't do well from the fall. It says that some of her blood spattered on the wall and on the horses, and they trampled on her. Now, I believe that Jehu intentionally used his horses against her. Remember, he's in a war chariot. These horses are trained to be vicious in battle. They don't just simply turn here and there, taking this weapons platform, this high-speed weapons platform, wherever the commander wants it. They also will run down infantrymen. They will run down foot soldiers. And so he probably uses them to just break her to pieces. I mean, really break her up. I'm sorry for being so graphic here, but I want you to understand that her corpse was a mess whenever he gets done running the horses over her. I have no doubt open compound fractures everywhere. And then he sickly does this. He went in and he ate and he drank. So he went into the palace and ordered a meal and spent some time eating and drinking. Now, again, I'm of the opinion that this is probably around midday, approaching midday. And so this is, I think, probably his noon meal. Maybe he takes several hours recuperating. But at some point, he then says this, "See now to this cursed woman and bury her, for she is a king's daughter." So Jezebel is the princess of Sidon. Her father was Ethbaal, the king of Sidon. And so Jehu is aware of this and finally comes to the conclusion, fine, go out there, collect up her broken body and put it in a tomb because, yeah, she is royalty. Verse 35, "But when they went to bury her, they found no more of her than the skull," so her head, "and the feet and the palms of her hands." The rest of her apparently got scavenged by the scavenger-type dogs, which is exactly what was prophesied. When they came back and told him that the only thing they could find was her head and hands and feet, he said, "This is the word of he who is, which he spoke by his servant Elijah the Tishbite. In the territory of Jezreel, the dogs shall eat the flesh of Jezebel, and the corpse of Jezebel shall be as dung on the face of the field in the territory of Jezreel, so that no one can say, 'This is Jezebel.'" Now, this is basically the idea that she gets eaten up by the dogs and they scatter her remains in fecal matter all over the place. And this was to make sure that she never had a very clear, full burial because of her wickedness. She is a horrendous person, and she becomes emblematic and symbolic of a very wicked person. In fact, her name gets used in the book of Revelation about another very wicked, troublemaking person that is condemned by God. Now, what else happened? I believe, as I already stated, that this is all taking place in the morning and midday of the day after Jehu was declared to be the new king and that he needed to take this action. So I believe that it is at this point in the late afternoon, evening, that he takes care of King Ahaziah. And so if we go to, let's see, where do we leave off at? In the 2 Chronicles passage, 22, verse number 8 is where I want to start. When Jehu was executing judgment on the house of Ahab, he met the princes of Judah and the sons of Ahaziah's brothers who attended Ahaziah, and he killed them. We're going to read about that in just a bit. But verse number 9, he searched for Ahaziah, and he was captured while hiding in Samaria. Now, that's not the city of Samaria, because we already know from 2 Kings that he was found and killed at Megiddo, where he fled after being wounded. And so this is the region of Samaria that's being referenced here. So it would appear that Jehu went out on a search party to Megiddo. Ahaziah gets found. He's wounded, hiding there. He is brought to Jehu, and then he is put to death. So he dies at Megiddo, just like we read in 2 Kings. And then, just like it says in 2 Kings, his servants took his body back to Jerusalem. In fact, it's 2 Kings 9:28. His servants carried him in a chariot to Jerusalem and buried him in his tomb with his fathers in the city of David. And so that's going to take a couple of days for his body to get back to Jerusalem. Meanwhile, we are going to... I almost forgot to finish up the 2 Chronicles 22 passage. 2 Chronicles 22, 7. They buried him, for they said, he is the grandson of Jehoshaphat, who sought he who is with all his heart. And then the house of Ahaziah had no one able to rule the kingdom, because he only has little kids, because he's only 22. We'll get back to that story probably next time, because now we have to finish up with what else Jehu is up to in dealing with his takeover of the northern kingdom. Chapter 10 of 2 Kings. Now Ahab had 70 sons in Samaria. So Jehu wrote letters and sent them to Samaria to the rulers of the city. And so this is apparently the city of Samaria we're talking about here, the capital city. To the elders, to the guardians of the son of Ahab. So it's not just simply direct sons of Ahab here. It would appear that we're talking about grandsons that we're talking about, because a lot of the sons of Ahab would have already been out of the picture. Verse number 2. Now then, as soon as this letter comes to you, seeing your master's sons are with you, and there are with you chariots and horses, fortified cities also, and weapons, then select the best and fittest of your master's sons and set him on your father's throne and fight for your master's house. So he basically puts out a challenge. All right, I am going to challenge anyone among the descendants of Ahab that wants to say they're the new king of northern Israel. Get ready for a fight. Verse 4. But they, the guardians, they were exceedingly afraid and said, behold, the two kings cannot stand before him. How then can we stand? So he who was over the palace, that is the ivory palace at Samaria, And he who was over the city, together with the elders and the guardians, sent to Jehu, saying, "We are your servants, and we will do all that you tell us." So we surrender. We acknowledge you as the new king of northern Israel. What do you want us to do? Do whatever is good in your eyes. So he wrote to them a second letter saying, "If you're on my side, if you're ready to obey me, then take the heads of your master's sons, come to me at Jezreel tomorrow at this time." And then the king's sons, 70 persons, were with the great men in the city who were bringing them up. And as soon as the letter came to them, they took the king's sons, they slaughtered them. 70 persons put their heads in baskets, and they sent them to him in Jezreel. So they show their surrender, their obedience to Jehu as the new king by executing what remained of the Ahab dynasty. And they send the heads in baskets. Verse 8, when the messenger came and told them, "They've brought the heads of the king's sons," he said, "Lay them in two heaps at the entrance of the king of the gate until the morning." And then in the morning when he went out, he stood and said to all the people, "You are innocent. It was I who conspired against my master and killed him. But who struck down all these?" So he basically says, "Yes, I'm the one that killed Jehoram, the king. But who killed these guys? Know then that there shall fall to the earth nothing of the word of he who is, which he who is spoke concerning the house of Ahab, for he who is has done what he said by his servant Elijah." So Jehu struck down all who remained in the house of Ahab in Jezreel, all his great men, his close friends, his priests, until he left none remaining. But we're still not done with the beginning of the Jehu dynasty.